Welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Daniela Walls, National Chair of the Tax Wall Street Party. We are recording this program on the afternoon of the 23rd of May, 2015. Webster Tarpley is still out changing world history, and he should be landing from Russia any time now. You can keep up with his live tweets at Webster G. Tarpley, and please retweet. I am here opening the show with Adam Rodriguez, who we all sat watching the results of his election come in on Tuesday night with bated breath. And the results seemed to be final. He was only 90 votes away from being in the general election. Hello, Adam.
Hey, Danielle. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Good. It's amazing you got so close. Congratulations. We needed to get to the second place where Everett is now, and you ended up with 1,479 votes, and Everett ended up with 1,569. So that's only 90 votes away. I mean, this is optimistic, Adam, for everybody.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, what was that?
No, you didn't interrupt. I was just saying it's very optimistic because it shows that you can win these grassroots elections.
Sure. And this is in an area where the population is highly disjointed, only because you have certain pockets of, this is a very rural area, but it's only recently been developed with a lot of people that are moving out of New Jersey, out of New York. You have, you know, New Yorkers and metropolitan New Jerseyans that are very progressive and forward and want all the advantages of, you know, a very built-up, kind of developed area while still being out here in the countries, per se. And so we're kind of cheek-to-jowl with an element of the county that is very kind of like staunch Republican. They might be Democrats, but a lot of them are what they call blue dogs or Dixiecrats, and they might not want development, and if they do, it would be to their own ends. It would be for their own benefit. In other words, you have to be able to approach them and say, well, you know, here's the things that we can do, and as a side effect for that, your business concerns, your construction firms, your real estate interests, you know, you're going to benefit from that because this is what we want to do. If you don't do that and reach out to them, and again, these are usually Democrats that are far to the right or Democrats that have switched party a long time ago and now Republicans. So that's what you're looking at here. And considering that I came really only about, at this point, maybe 90 to 100 votes short. After the tabulations closed down, they're still counting in some of the write-ins, or rather, not, I'm sorry, some of the absentee ballots. And there may be even some write-ins. I don't know. But basically, by and large, there were another 50 votes that were added in on top of that, so I'm a little bit over 1,500 votes being all told. Now, that was the third place.
Does that mean there's any chance with the write-in votes, or do you think
it's
going to end up where it's at?
It's just going to stay where it's at. Well, there were write-ins in other counties, and a friend of mine told me that certain states don't count write-ins. It's very difficult to do a write-in. But apparently in the state of Pennsylvania, this is a growing movement, and at least in Monroe County, and there were numerous write-in candidacies throughout the county for different races. There was a school board election. There was constable's positions, because these are all elected officials. If you want to become constable, which are not under the sheriff's department, they work for the state, but they also work conjointly with the Department of State, which is the Board of Elections. So they're out there enforcing election rules, making sure that electioneers are a certain distance away from the polling station. If there's any disruption at the event, they're there to mediate that. Local sheriffs and police are not allowed in until it's resolved inside by the constable. And if they can't, then the police and the sheriff's department comes in, because it has to be completely unbiased and arbitrary, and it has to be run by the Department of State and the Board of Elections. So, again,
well, this should prove, though, that the responsibility in this case falls on us. It falls on all of us.
Oh, yeah.
Listeners, I mean, this could have been achieved, if we look at this 90 votes, if more people got involved making calls you in that last few days. And I'm just going to make a point here. I don't mean to use your campaign to make the point, but it's a perfect example that these are the days to get active. And activist means active. Like, this should activate you. And, you know, sitting on social media all day, I don't think it's going to cut it anymore. You need to get a hold of the phone list. We had a phone list of super voters. And, I mean, I called some people the night before to help out, and they were watching the Mad Men finale. And I don't want to be too harsh here, but now if you were not phone banking for Adam that night and watching the Mad Men finale, it's time maybe to ask some hard questions. And this Titanic, you know, we're all in, is sinking. And then Americans were binge watching television series, and it could have been you alone. I'm speaking to anybody who's listening in the audience that got those last 90 people to the polls for you. We should also, Adam, really quickly thank the unsung heroes from our group. And the first people that come to mind are Matt Brosnan and Bernie Brown.
Sure. Bernie. Yeah. Bernie was, you know, I've never spoken directly with Bernie, but, you know, from what I've been told, he was a really staunch supporter, working in the backgrounds, working the phones, calling people from the super voter list, which we cultivated, and which is very accurate. We cultivated here in the county, calling them up, just letting them know that I'm running. And, you know, it's all about name recognition. You know, unfortunately, I'm not a candidate that was born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I don't have a lot of money, and I'm having to rely on my own, you know, wits and my own wherewithal and my charisma and getting people to trust me in order to get my name out there. And if that in public office happens to be where I want to be,
one thing about Bernie as an example is that he was doing this from out in California.
Right.
Which people can help each other get into these local seats, and you've just proved that this is
very
achievable.
Doable. It's very doable. Because let's go over from a top-down perspective where we were at. So because Matt did such unbelievable research back from the 2011 election, and that's the kind of thing that you pay outside consultants to do for you. Matt came on because of his ability to work spreadsheets using Excel. He's very adept at that. This is pretty much what he does for his full-time job in another capacity, but very similar, crunching numbers. He was able to run down on a precinct-by-precinct basis where the Democratic vote was strongest in the last 2011 municipal election, okay, in the off-year election, and where Democratic votes were weakest. So we were able to target very early on where I needed to be able to have the most amount of outreach, whether it's through phone banking, mailers, getting out to events, identifying local leaders in that area that I needed to reach out to and shake hands with and work with. Matt did that right from the start. So, I just really appreciated that, because he was able to say, you had roughly a little bit over 4,000 votes. And then I was told by somebody in my own party that we had a little bit over 5,000 votes. So there was a discrepancy of about 1,000 votes. And I still think it was around 4,000 plus votes. I could be wrong, but at any rate, this election...
Adam, let's finish this conversation on the other side. You're listening to World's Crisis Radio. For Dr. Tarpley. On the other side of the break, Adam, you were talking about how the votes broke down and to show how close we came.
Yeah, right. So basically, you know, Matt was able to determine that we had a little over 4,000 votes. I was told by someone else it might be over 5,000. So I think this time it came out a little bit closer to 5,000, because you had the top vote getter getting somewhere around 2,300, maybe 2,400 votes. That was Christie. he was the one that was given the most amount from the Republicans because he was drug up by Moyer and Garris, or actually Moyer, he's a former friend of his, who's one of the city and county commissioners. And then the next top vote getter was Everett, and I believe he got 1640 when all was said and done. And then myself, I was able to get about 1530 around there. And then the other candidate was able to get about that was Andre Reims. He came with another 40 or 50 points below me. So you tally all those together, and it's pretty much close to about 5,000. And so the only thing that separated myself from Alan Everett was those 90 votes. So, again, you know, I was only about 90 votes away from winning this thing. And
was that subterfuging or scheming, you think, by the Republicans in this?
Oh, yeah, no question. No question. And, you know, this whole thing was power broke in the background, power broke from the background right from the beginning. You know, the minute that Andre and I decided that we were going to run, you had the most reactionary elements within the county here that absolutely refused to have anything to do with myself or Andre. And I feel myself in particular because I was an X factor for them. I wasn't just a minority. I happen to be a Latino with a lot of cross party appeal because, you know, although I'm Latino, I'm fairly well spoken. I appeal to different peoples of different social backgrounds and ethnicities. So I think they saw me probably as the biggest threat between the two of us in terms of what I meant if I were to gain the commissionership. So they went all out. They found two people to flank them, one being this guy, Alan Everett, who was actually recruited by the current county commissioner, Suzanne McCool, who is a Democrat, and she's leaving. She's retiring. And it couldn't, as far as I'm concerned, it couldn't be sooner because she represents the exact opposite of what this party, of where we should be going. If she's going to go out and recruit this quote-unquote Democrat, Alan Everett, who's really probably more conservative than a lot of Tea Partiers that I've ever met as a Democrat, then really she's done herself a disservice. She's done a disservice to the county because between me and Andre, we were a damn sight better than Alan Everett. That's all I can say. And his family,
with this Republican machine flanking you, you did as well as you did.
Yeah, no question. And that's just the one. Then the other guy, Christy, he was specifically kind of anointed or recruited by Moyer. Moyer is the other Republican commissioner, and you know, I could go on about, you know, how he's unfriendly to labor, and that's a mild term. And he went out and recruited this guy Christy. His wife is a Republican who's on the school board here out in Monroe County, in actually the Stroudburg School District. And so Christy is the Democrat, nominal Democrat, who's worked with Shawnee Development Corporation. This is a large real estate holding firm out here in the eastern part of the Poconos along the Delaware River. He's worked for Wyndham Properties, which is a well-known Republican, very reactionary real estate company that has properties worldwide. And then he's also worked for a lot of big contractors, civil engineers, and developers that do a lot of work for these two real estate holdings, and he's worked for them for the past more than 20 years. And so they kind of use the excuses, oh, well, this one person worked on the fire department with John Moyer. That's why he's friends with him. That's not the reason why they're friends. He was his boss. He was his boss. And, in fact, I was told by other people throughout this eastern part of the county that he's not, John Christie is not liked amongst the local, his own neighborhood. He's not liked within the Wyndham property and Shawnee Development area because of their the way they treat a lot of the Smithfield township. He's very dismissive, and he's not very outgoing. A lot of his he's also attacked labor, and you know, some of the things that he wants as a priority in terms of what needs to be changed here in the county are far different than what I would focus on in terms of income inequality and better paying jobs. And he wants to focus on, miraculously, projects that are going on to propitiate the developers and the construction firms that he's worked with in the past.
So this is what politics is like at the local level, and where we wonder why it's corrupt at the federal level.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And I don't want to discourage people from running for office themselves at the local level, and I want to make sure that I hope you know. Can you stay possibly for another segment with us, Adam?
No problem. Yeah.
Okay, because I want you. I really want you to give a tutorial for somebody in their own county who wants to do this before we end. So maybe we can remember to squeeze that in the next segment.
Yeah, that's no problem. That's no problem. Because, you know, if there's one thing I've learned, and you've probably heard this a million times, is that, you know, all politics is local, you know. You can do, as a tax Wall Street party candidate, as a American system advocate, whether you're in the Democratic or Republican Party, you can do a lot to change that at the local level. And you might not think it, but you really can, because you bring to the table an awareness of history and economics that most people just don't have. And assuming that you have really good a really good ability to reach out to people, to shake hands with them, that you're affable, that you're friendly, you can get your points across, not get flustered when they do attack you, not get disappointed, and just be able to just get right back up again and advocate for what you would consider a project or something that's going to benefit the people along the lines of the American system, you know?
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier, how you only learn by doing it. And
that's right.
When you're out on the street with your clipboard, you learn how to sell your message.
Right.
And let's finish this on the other side. You're listening to World Crisis Radio. This is Daniela Walls with Adam Rodriguez. Daniela Walls filling in for Dr. Webster Tarpley with Adam Rodriguez, who just ran for Monroe County Commissioner. And we're learning the lessons of how to do this ourselves in our own county. And we were just saying that you only learn by doing it. You've got to get out and do it. We've got a social media generation that's not getting out at the grassroots level, getting out on the street. It's Twitter and Facebook all day, all night, all the time. And you really learn how to sell the message and become a communicator when you're out there knocking on doors. At least that's what I found. And, one other thing I was just going to say is, though, we were talking also about the knowledge of history. And that's also important, because when you do get into office, then you're not, history is when it's going to keep you from being susceptible to corruption.
Right.
Don't you think?
Right. That's right. Yeah, I agree. Because you see yourself as a world historical figure, and that's key. Because if you don't, then it's very easy for you to become corrupted. It's very easy for you to sell yourself out, to compromise your values. Because, as you know, if you look at it that way, there's no right, there's no wrong. You're just in this kind of existentialist, you know, wasteland. And as far as you're concerned, you know, as a politician, if you're thinking that way, or anybody really, it's just, what can I get for now? And that's it. And
yeah, you're going to get hit with, by all angles, with criticism, with bribes, and you need to say, who am I in the context of world history?
Exactly, exactly. And if you don't do that, you're just, like I said, you're just lost in a wasteland that will subsume you and spit you out quicker than you could possibly imagine. And I think it's the better politicians, the good politicians that can survive that, because they see themselves that way. Now, not all of them might not be good politicians for the people, but they might just be better politicians because they believe in a certain ideology. Now, obviously, this is a struggle, and the American system is key. And understanding the American system, the idea of national banking, high tariffs, understanding how labor works, how our economy is supposed to function in terms of a very highly functioning, highly manufacturing-based economy, with also, you know, sitting cheek to jowl right next to a lot of agriculture too. So we can't discount that either. There has to be a healthy balance between a properly maintained environment, manufacturing in certain areas, and then agriculture as well, spread out throughout your region.
You have to go into these races, I think, proceeding from the concept.
Right.
And you have to know what you stand for walking in and keep that as a compass. I mean, the PWA, Public Works Administration, TVA, they were all controversial at their time, but somebody had to have the courage in the face of that criticism to get them built.
Right.
And
we need that type
of courage in our candidates today. So that's why I want people who are listeners of this audience and students of the American system like yourself to be running for office.
Right, right.
That's the point of this whole experiment here.
Right. Well, what it was an experiment, exactly.
No, yours wasn't an experiment. Yours was real. I mean, the experiment of getting our listeners to start running for office, to get and start running.
You got that? Yeah, no. And look, this is what's made America great successively. We've come to this point where we're just sitting around looking at each other saying, what the hell are we doing wrong in our country here? How can we solve this? And it's a few leaders throughout the country that have the courage and the faith of their convictions to actually pull America up by its bootstraps and be able to not take any serious criticisms that seriously, because if you do, you're sunk. And, you know, what you were saying before about the social media, you know, our own party falls victim to that. You have a lot of people who get on Facebook, they get on social media, and, you know, they kind of get it's very sexy, you know, to a certain degree. It's very persuasive and seductive, and people think that they're reaching out. And to a certain degree, it is an important tool. But nothing can substitute for you getting out, going out, meeting people, shaking their hands, getting involved with local community organizations. There's plenty of great organizations you can get involved with right at the national level, too. You see this big, huge fight for $15 per hour. Get involved with those local groups. Get involved with those local organizations that are fighting for better pay. Get involved with maybe even your local Rotary. Get involved with your local, maybe even the Chamber of Commerce, as reactionary as it is to a certain degree. Get involved with all these civic organizations. Get involved with your local Democratic Party. Reach out to different cultural organizations. But most importantly, to learn the nuts and bolts of what it takes to run a campaign. A, first thing you do is go down to your county courthouse, go down to your municipal building, ask for the paperwork that you're going to need in order to file for office. That's number one. Get the money together, make the filing, find yourself someone that's going to be a treasurer, find yourself someone that's going to be your campaign manager, find yourself somebody that you can rely on to put together some events as a communication director to reach out to people so you can raise money, because you're going to need some money, all right? These are all very practical, simple things and first steps that it's going to take in order for you to kind of get out there, be you man or woman. Recently, naturalized as a citizen, whatever race, creed, color you are, this is what it's going to take for you to do this, because it's not that hard. And you know, they make it a little difficult purposely because they want to see that you're committed to this. But once you start developing a relationship, whether it's your county office or your township buildings, that you are going through the process of trying to, you know, get involved in local government, or even like a state office, you know, running for state rep out here, or running for a state senator's position, that's where it starts. And once they see you at these buildings, they get to know you, and it's, oh, hey, you know, there's Adam, and he knows the ropes, and he knows the process, and they're more than willing to help you most of the time. They're more than willing, okay? Then the next step is, you know, you need to put together, like, if you want to do it, say, with the Republican Party, then fine. You want to do it with the Democratic Party, even better, because I'm a Democrat, okay? If you want to do it as an independent, that's the way to go, too. But either way, it's just a lot of finding where your voters are, finding where the people that you want to appeal to first, and work them. go out, tell them what you want to do. Tell them what you want to do here in your township, in your county, what you can do for improvements. You see, one of the things I learned just the other day, all right, well, I didn't learn it, but I got a firsthand explanation of how it works. There was a former congressman from New Jersey that I really liked a lot. His name is Rush Holt. All right. He was a big advocate for nuclear power. He was a former physicist from...
And he was also the advocate for the Wall Street sales tax, wasn't he?
He was, in fact, yes. Oh. He was an advocate for a transaction tax and also for fission, for fusion research, okay? So he was friends with a Middlesex mayor. I'm not sure which town exactly. He now lives up here in the Poconos, and I met him just the other day, and he said he would have conversations with Russ Holt all the time. And if he needed something, and if he needed money, if he needed a grant, he would go to Russ Holt to work with him for those things. Because we don't have a national bank. We have a dysfunctional Congress. We have a dysfunctional Senate. We have a dysfunctional system of how to get money from the federal level down to the state level for projects of great importance, and leaving ourselves bare for Wall Street and hedge funds and banks to come in and offer up money for these projects at usurious rates. And that's a ripoff. That's this whole public-private partnership nonsense is just a total ripoff. Whenever I hear people at the state level talking about this, and these are politicians, I'm just like, I have to look at them sideways and go, are you sure that you're thinking straight about this? Because, you know, we used to do these things back all the way up until the mid to late 70s on federal money, and now we're not getting a dime one for these projects, you know?
Adam, thanks for joining us. Can we finish this conversation next week?
Oh, yeah, sure, no problem.
Congratulations on how far you got. Amazing job. See you on the other side. This is World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis. Daniela Walls filling in for Dr. Webster Tarpley. We were just talking to Adam Rodriguez, who ran for county commissioner in Monroe County, Pennsylvania, and came very close, 90 votes shy of entering the general election. So we can see that this can be done. If you want to try to take a seat in your local area and you need some tools, we can put you in touch with Adam. We can help out with some tools, too. Contact us at taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com. All spelled out, Tax Wall Street Party, all lowercase, @gmail.com. And we will put you in touch with Adam and give you some tools. And also, you know, remember these positions come with a salary. This isn't just quixotic. And I tend to think about how much time we all spend on social media. People can spend 10 hours a day, but then they say, well, I don't have the time to spend running for my local office. And I think that we all might need to consider the fact that we do, and at the end of a few months of campaigning, you might get into office with a substantial salary. So, and what's social media ever really going to give back? So like to think about that. The Baltimore riots, I want to make a few points about this. The Baltimore riots may be over, but the violence continues to spread. I was reading there was 164 non-fatal shootings and 50 fatal shootings this year alone. And without even going into those details yet, I just want to say, isn't it obvious that the answer is no jobs, no peace? I think the UFA has a meme about that. And if not, we have to make one. But it's no jobs, no peace. Al Sharpton and crew can spin no jobs, no peace into no justice, no peace. But you have a bunch of young men with testosterone running in their veins, and then we give them nothing to do. I'm surprised it isn't worse. So, like, sorry. What do we all think is going to happen if you have that situation? It will be a war zone, and in any war zone, bad things happen. Both sides are going to brutalize each other. No jobs, no peace is backwards. The right way around historically is no jobs, no peace. And you know what? Like, that should go for all races. Rioting is not the way to do it, but demanding jobs for all is. Why isn't every unemployed man of every race in this country out demanding a new CC, Civilian Conservation Corps, or WPA, or PWA. The New Deal had a lot of acronyms, but I know why, and I, is it because we're all, we've all been a victim of psychological operations for so long, operations that made it so we don't even know what the CCC is? I mean, we were talking with Adam that people were watching the Mad Men finale, and this really got to me. But they were, when instead of making calls for Adam, they said, it's so important I watch this Mad Men finale series. And I came together, like, they're watching Mad Men, but they forgot what life was supposed to be. We've lost the ability to imagine a better life. We've forgotten how it is. Wall Street funded foundation, Madison Avenue slogans, and TV, and all of that sleight of hand are paid to make a lot of smoke and a lot of noise, so you never hear CCC. So it's our job here to tell what that is. The idea of the CCC was to take young, poor, unemployed men, similar to the ones that the media, you know, it calls thugs in Baltimore, and have them build something. How about a high-speed rail line from Baltimore to D.C.? And not just at a decent living wage, but to be proud of what they built. Like my great uncles would brag to me, I grew up in New York City, about how their fathers helped build the Brooklyn Bridge every time we drove over it. And what's cooler, to have built the Brooklyn Bridge or to smoke pot? I was just in Baltimore, and it's a beautiful city. I was astonished by the architecture, but then part of it is stone cold ghetto, and nobody wanted to live like that, especially the people living in the ghetto. And if we made an emergency CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC was part of the New Deal and employed 2 million men. Please look that up. We need an emergency CCC, rebuilding and modernizing the rail, like the rail that just crashed. And if we started something similar on the East Coast, you would see Baltimore turn into another Manhattan overnight. The CCC was filled with low-income tough guys who suddenly were recruited into this and got a good wage building stuff. Look that up. I want people to remember what this stuff is. Last week was National Infrastructure Week, and what clearer message could have been sent than riots coupled alongside the Amtrak crash? It's like, hello, rioters want good paying jobs and we need to modernize our rail system. Crash right next to rioters, so you figure it out. The GOP reactionaries are already yelling that the left is going to call for more infrastructure. Well, oh really? Like, have any of them looked at the roads or bridges or tunnels lately? Our bridges are crumbling. Our tunnels are leaking. The infrastructure is 100 years old. The left says that the taxpayer needs to pick up the tab to rebuild it. I don't agree with that. We don't agree with that. We say there's another way. 0% loans from the Fed, the same loans they extend to Wall Street zombie banks and a Wall Street tax, 1-2 punch, and that's where your money comes from. Or we can keep ignoring Wall Street and keep ignoring Wall Street forever and let them off the hook and then live in hell on earth. I've never spoken to anybody left or right that doesn't think we need our roads, rails, bridges, and tunnels rebuilt. So the only question should be, how are we going to do it? That should be the only question. I know that everything is politicized and the global elite who don't use the roads and bridges or live in the places where the infrastructure is crumbling, they don't care because they don't use our infrastructure. But most of our beautiful roads, our dams, our bridges were built in the 1930s, and they were funded by the United States government. So this is another point. For everybody who says that everything the government touches is a mess, I have more news for you. These projects were also supervised by the United States government. The Triborough Bridge, the Empire State Building, LaGuardia Airport, the Golden Gate Bridge, the Tennessee Valley Authority, the Shasta Dam, Hoover Dam, schools, firehouses, libraries, all that stuff you see around you built with 1920s architecture. You can just Google projects built under the New Deal. That is what we call infrastructure, and they were built with government jobs. So this trend that's all over the right, it's even on the left, the trend of conservatives, the new, more virulent GOP, and every other modern anarchist who says that government is always bad, you're historically wrong. If you think the government can't make something work, then how do you account for having the strongest military in the world? YouTube a U.S. Navy advertisement. Watch a few U.S. Navy advertisements on YouTube. Just go out and do that as an experiment. And then you come back and you tell me that the U.S. government is helpless and hapless and a bungler. It's simply a lie that's been sold to you by Madison Avenue madmen, and you're all buying it. We can build aircraft carriers. We are capable of amazing technology, NASA, but we're not capable of building rail and putting the rioters to work building something they can be proud of at a decent wage. Total hogwash. So, this week people were arguing with me. I was bringing this up and they said, one argument was, and it's just so pedestrian. They say the learning curve is too steep. How can you teach inner city youth to rebuild infrastructure? Well, we did it in the 30s. I mean, take a look at those phenomenal feats of engineering that low-income inner city workers built. If you think that, then you suffer from a lack of imagination. I mean, look at the Golden Gate Bridge. They figured out how to do it then, the PWA. We were talking about with Adam earlier, I had said that it was... World Crisis Radio. I'm Daniela Walls, filling in with Dr. Webster Tarpley, and I'm joined again by my good friend and correspondent in Athens, Greece, Michael Chiotinas. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
I wanted to fill you in that on the other side of the break, I was talking about the WPA and how we need to put the rioters back to work, building something. And I was saying on the other side of the break that people were telling me this week that the learning curve is too steep and inner city youth could never build infrastructure. But I was saying we did it in the 1930s, and take a look at the phenomenal feats of engineering that low income inner city workers built. And we were talking about the Golden Gate Bridge, the Empire State Building, LaGuardia Airport, Tennessee Valley Authority, the dams, which is, you know, the Shasta Dam, the Hoover Dam, and all the rest, the schools, the firehouses, the libraries, all the stuff we call infrastructure that we're still living off of. And that's what the Tax Wall Street Party and the UFAA demand is, to start rebuilding similar infrastructure, modernizing the infrastructure. And if you think, and I was saying that, you know, if you think that we can't do that now, then people are suffering from a lack of imagination. And Adam Rodriguez, who ran for Monroe County Commissioner, and I think had an amazing result, but I was telling him that the PWA, the Public Works Administration, and the TVA, which were both part of the New Deal, were controversial at their time, but somebody had to stand up in the face of that criticism and have courage and get them built. And I was saying we need some of that back in our veins today instead of wasting away in circles of chat on Twitter. And we need courage back. We need integrity. Adam and I were talking about proceeding from the concept when you begin to run for office and getting out and running for office, we talked about, and learning your history, which is important, so you are not corruptible when you get into office. But instead, think of yourself as world historical, or else enjoy the riots.
Yeah, and throw your lives in the waste bin, actually. you guys in America think we had riots because of the way the media likes to portray things, but really, what we had were large demonstrations in Greece. We didn't have riots. The footage you may have seen with a line underneath saying Greece riots, Greek riots, or riots in Greece, were just small groups of anarchists clashing with police. And you're absolutely right. What matters is people's creativity, productivity, how to increase productivity, how to increase the the capital of the land and how to make stuff that make people's lives better, you know?
Yeah, make stuff that other countries want to buy and get people productive, and how to get them to focus on that instead of these sensational riots and people looting. It's almost like, it's almost sick. Do you guys like watching this? Are you entertained by that? Like you're entertained by Mad Men, or do you want to do something about the problem? You know, I have to do something really quickly, Michael, and you're going to be with me for the rest of the show. So bear with me while I get through this. I should have probably done it before I called you on air. But I want to make the announcement that the Tax Wall Street Party and the United Fund Against Austerity and Webster Tarpley have 5 panels this year at the Left Forum, which is more than any other year that we've done so far. That's going to be, and I'm announcing this because I want you, if you're in the New York area, to join us, to come to these panels. Every year that Webster's done them in the past, it's been standing room only. The room has been packed, you know, to the back door with people standing behind the seats. So we already know we're going to have a great turnout, but please come and join us and also meet us. Meet us. It's a way to meet people from the party. It's a way to meet me. It's a way to meet Webster. So come out and meet us, and we're going to be with a bunch of distinguished guests. I'm like, Ray McGovern's coming with us, and, Wayne Madsen, and a bunch of other, they're listed in the panels. I want to go through this really, the details. So it's at the Department of Sociology at the CUNY Graduate Center, 365 Fifth Avenue. I think that's around 59th Street. It might be it's the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, I think. Here's what you do. You go to leftform, leftform.org, and you can look up the address there. It's going to be from May 29th to June 1st, so it's next weekend. And, well, all the information is going to be on the website. The phone number, the address, there's no reason for me to repeat it. Go to leftforum.org. So we have 5 panels. Our first panel is going to be on Saturday. Saturday is going to be a crazy day, Michael. We have panels from 10 a.m. to 7 or 9 p.m. But 10 a.m. to 11:50 a.m. is going in room, well, you can look this up. I'm going to you know what I'll do? I'll post all this stuff on the taxwallstreetparty.org website or twsp.us, either domain works, or againstausterity.org or at tarpley.net. We'll post the entire list of schedules. But let me just tell you what panels we have. We have one with the Tax Wall Street Party, and that is, does the United Front Against Austerity and the Tax Wall Street Party have the demands needed for jobs and justice? And that is going to be with me, the chairperson, and then Austin local members, Maryland local members, the Carolinas local members, New Jersey local members. So they're all going to be giving a workshop on what they face on the ground in their own states. So we will have the North and the South represented, and we might have people coming from California at the last moment. Then our panel 2 is going to be Webster's longest panel, and that's going to be the one. If you want to see Webster, you really want to attend. It's called Not Hillary, Not Jeb, Stopping the Permanent Dictatorship of Austerity and War. So Webster's going to do that full panel. I think I'm going to do a short introduction, and I am also going to use that time to cover the case of Reverend Edward Pinckney in Benton Harbor. This will be a panel discussing who will lead the fight against economic austerity, coming from both the Democrat and Republican parties. What are the demands needed to destroy the usurious finance that parasitizes the people while hollowing out America's economic potential? What political movement in the U.S. has a program, organizational strategy, and visionary leadership to create 30 million union wage jobs, everything we've been talking about before, 21st century infrastructure, Medicare for all, and free public education, and how can we organize an international united front to fight the banksters, warmongers, and reactionaries of our time? We will discuss the strategies and tactics for educating, organizing, and mobilizing a mass movement uniting civil rights, anti-war, and class struggle. So join the discussion on how to organize a Syriza Party for America. And there's a suggested reading list for this panel, which is Webster Tarpley's Surviving the Cataclysm. Also, our program at againstausterity.org, taxwallstreetparty.org, twsp.us, and materials and an outreach toolkit will be available to you on the day of that workshop. We're going to be providing that. Then panel three is going to be on Saturday from 3:15 to 5 p.m. So this is called Political Correctness and Its Devastating Effect on the Left. And that's going to be sponsored by our friends at Vox News. The participants are going to be Harry Stuckey, who's the chair of Vox News, Webster Tarpley, and Wayne Madsen from the Wayne Madsen Report. Session four, or panel four, is from 5:10 to 7 p.m. And that's Building an Anti-Imperialist Front for 2016 from a co-opted anti-war movement. I'll finish the panels on the other side, and we'll continue our talk tonight. This is Daniela Walls filling in for Dr. Webster Tarpley. On the other side of the break, I was talking about our five panels this year, more than any other year, at the Left Forum. We're basically taking over the place. So I had announced the first three. I just want to finish up the last two. So on Saturday, 5:10 to 7 p.m., we have Building an Anti-Imperialist Front for 2016 from a co-opted anti-war movement. The participants are going to be Joe Calhoun, chair and journalist and filmmaker from Colorado, Don DeBar, activist and radio show host from New York City, and Webster Tarpley. And then the last panel is going to be on Sunday from 3:40 to 5. So basically, Saturday and Sunday are the days that – Saturday is the big day, and then we have one on Sunday. And session number seven is – ISIS and Islamic extremism, a failure of U.S. policy, or precisely what the hidden hand of U.S. power wants. And that's sponsored again by our friends at Vox News with participants Harry Stuckey from the chair of Vox News, Webster Tarpley, and Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst. And then plus I've been invited to a few other panels to just do a guest speaking event on how comedy has failed the American public. And and you should come to Randy Credico's panel for that and a panel with Lee Camp. So go there
and ask questions and understand this stuff because this is super interesting. I was standing here hearing this. This is super interesting. So people should get there and they should listen and ask questions and get involved.
Thank you, Michael. Moving back to Greece, the German Huffington Post raved against Varoufakis with a hate monger extreme tone. Yeah. And what we need to get into what is this about, because this was vile filth from our friend Arcana.
This is what this is about. The establishment is furious against Varoufakis. Let's not beat around the bush here. He is one of the most important people in European politics.
Agree.
If not the single most important. A true asset. The only hope for the Eurozone to remain in one piece, in my opinion. Varoufakis seems to not be afraid of Schäuble's political bullying. He says, I won't be blackmailed to sign something that could never work. And he actually knows what he's talking about. Also, very important, he has repeatedly called for a European banking union under the supervision of ESM.
Can you tell the audience what the ESM is?
ESM is the European Stability Mechanism. It's a stupid financial instrument or fund. that the Eurozone countries created to quote-unquote bail out failing states. We know this means bailing out banks, but blaming the states. In this kind of a scenario that Varoufakis is proposing, this ESM would be given the authority to open the books of failing banks whatever country they are in, put them under bankruptcy protection, clear them of toxic assets, aka derivatives, and then recapitalize them instead of bailing out nations with money that the nations then use to bail out banks, and then have that as a burden on their national debt and subsequently be forced to impose austerity. So he's trying to put an end to this absurdity. If there ever was a true European federalist...
Oh, I'm through, please. Thank you. Reverend Pinckney, are you with us?
I'm with you, Danielle. I'm with you. I think I only have 5 to 6 minutes to talk, but whatever needs to be done, we need to do it right away. And I tell you, we are excited. I got the transcript that I've been talking about. I've been talking about this transcript. Now we finally have it. And I have discovered that they had absolutely no evidence that could have convicted me. And I'm feeling good, Danielle. I'm feeling good about this whole situation. Now they're trying to hold up the other part of the transcript to keep us from getting that so we can get that appeal bond and get that, you know, get a hearing on that. So it's been one issue after another, Danielle. But listen, we need to get the word out a little bit better. We've got to get people moving out there so people can understand how serious this is. And we cannot allow them to continue to perform what they've been performing. And it's been tremendous just doing what we need to do, which is so important. I take. I'm feeling good, and I think things are going to be back. Yes. But we got to do what we got to do. You understand?
We're in contact with the Italian unions, the Whirlpool Union in Italy, because they're trying to lay off 2,000 workers, and I'm talking to them about your story.
Absolutely. So, matter of fact, you should be talking about that and tell them about it. So in Italy, they're trying to lay off 2,000 Whirlpool employees, trying to lay them off, huh? So
and Italians are good fighters, and they have a history of fighting, so... And striking, so we're talking to them right now and trying to get them activated, and they are about to get activated. The talks just started the other day, so
very good, mm-hmm. Very good.
And also, Reverend Pinckney, we're representing you at 5 different panels at the Left Forum this year because I know you did that with us in the past.
Yes.
So we.
Here's something I was thinking too. Maybe I can call in to one of the panels.
That's a great idea. I will bring a device and give you a phone number for you to call in and speak to the audience on a screen. I will set that up.
Absolutely. That would be tremendous, Danielle, because I tell you, we got to let the world know about this prison system. We got to let them know about this criminal justice system. And we got to let them know that Barron County is running a criminal enterprise, and they're doing everything in their power right now to stop us from, stop me from getting out of here. They're doing everything. They're going all behind the table. They're going undercover. They just doing things because they know that once I get out, it's full steam straight ahead. So they're doing what they normally do, which is anything they can do to stop people and stop a movement. But they won't stop this movement because we're prepared to go to the next level. But yes, I will be.
This is an excellent idea, and if you could only get through to one of the panels, what I could also do, Reverend Pinckney, is give a presentation with slides on the case, and then play the tape of you speaking to us when you can get through at all 5 of the panels. Because they're sold out, almost all of our panels. And you're no stranger to the Left Forum. You were with us in the past.
Right. As a matter of fact, every year I used to go to the Left Forum in New York.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
My intention is was to be there this year. And what day is it? I'm thinking it's about the 5th of June?
No, it's from May 29th to June 1st this year.
Okay.
So that weekend...
Right, next weekend. Absolutely. Okay, well, you make sure you tell all the listeners to tune in because I definitely going to have my intention of being there. Even if I have to be there by phone, I'm still there. Whatever it takes. And I like to be, if I could get in all 5, I would love to be in all 5.
I'll make sure that happens, Reverend Pinckney. Can you stay with us to the other side of the break?
I might be gone, but if I'm him, you know.
Okay. You're listening to World's Crisis Radio. We'll see you on the other side of the break. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Angel Walls on the line with Reverend Pinckney from Coldwater, Michigan. And we were talking about the Left Forum. Reverend, are you still there with us?
Yes, I am. And I'm at the Coldwater Penitentiary here. And I want people to know we're calling directly from the prison itself. So, you know, we're doing the show just straight from the prison, and I think that would be such a big deal at the forum. Here I am calling from the prison itself, talking to all those people. I think that would be gigantic, Danielle. I'm excited about it.
I'm excited about that, too. That's an excellent idea. We actually just came up with that, I think, right here.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Right on West the show with Danielle, the host. How about that?
I'm going to put together about a 20 to 30 minute slideshow detailing the case from beginning to end with pictures of you, pictures of the events. I'll put that together with the help of Larry and your wife and Ethel. And then,
I want you to make sure you know, if you want me to be there next week, make sure you give Dorothy all the information.
I'm going to give her all the information. I'll figure out a technical way that's best to set it up, and then I'll give Dorothy all the information well in advance.
And remember, I'm only going to have 15 minutes to speak. Only 15 minutes.
Yes, you'll have 15 minutes to speak. Right, so I'll plan that 15 minutes is dedicated to you, and I will record you talking in case, because we have five all on one day, or four on one day. Perhaps more because I've been invited as a guest speaker to several little side events, so I can even bring that tape in with me and replay the tape as if it's live. You see?
Absolutely. And listen, I'm going to be more than happy to be part of that. It's really, and most people, a lot of people know me at the Left Forum too. And so that would be tremendous, you know, get a chance just to do something. And, you know, you might even want to set up a little table or something so people can have some literature to pass out to them also.
We're going to do that. I'm going to bring flyers that represent your case, and then we're going to have some flyers for us. So we're going to set up a whole table, and we'll put up some pictures that outline the situation in Benton Harbor at our table.
Very good. I'm excited now. You see, you took this thing to a whole different level, because what we need now, we just need a little bit more exposure to get these people moving and in a whole different direction.
Yes, and it's, you know, like everything else, it's just, I hate that you're there, but it's a process, you know?
Yes, it is. You said the magic word. It is a process. And believe me, I have been through the process. But I'm.
You have 1 minute remaining.
With Danielle, I only got 1 minute left.
Yeah, I hate that sound.
What I'm going to do is that we're going to make arrangements for me to be there, and just give me a time, and the date that you want me there, and I would definitely do it that way. So
I'll call Lee and Dorothy tomorrow and start setting this all up.
Very good. And listen, we like I told you, we got the transcript. We were still short. We still got to get two more transcripts for February 27th and April the 14th. So those who are out there who can donate, please donate. Go to bhbanco.org. And whatever you can give, we'll be grateful, because we need those transcripts also. So I want to thank everybody who has contributed. And I think they did a tremendous job. And we're just one step away, Danielle.
Yes.
So let's do what we need to do.
And maybe people, I always suggest people make that as a recurring payment, as part of something that they do to help fight against this American oligarchical system. And the theme of our show earlier was...
Thank you for using Global Tellink.
Well, Reverend Pinckney had to go on that note. The theme of the rest of our show was this destructive television watching and how it's taken time from us, and this circular, never-ending social media cacophony. And if you could cancel your Netflix subscription after you watched that show, House of Cards, and you found out that it was all building up to a big operation message, which said, you are entitled to nothing on the last episode. You are entitled to nothing. Oh, really, Kevin Spacey? Thanks for making us watch 40 hours of wasted life. Cancel your Netflix subscription, if nothing more than for just that one line, that you are entitled to nothing. So That was the finale of one of the last seasons. Just horrifying. So cancel your $9.99 Netflix subscription and turn it over to Reverend Pinckney. And start that way. Start by getting involved. These are the days to get active. Michael's still on the line with me. So, Michael, on the other side of the break, or when Reverend Pinckney called in, we were talking about the slander in the media against Varoufakis. And, Michael, you were saying what Varoufakis represents in the European political establishment. Could we start there?
Yes, I was saying he's trying to put an end to this absurdity of the bailouts by creating a banking union that can put failing banks under bankruptcy. If there ever was a true European federalist, that's Varoufakis. But you know, let us be realists here.
How do you mean realists?
Do they really think he doesn't know what he's talking about? Do they really believe that carrying on implementing the same policies that have brought the Greek economy to its knees can ever bring better results?
No, I just want to interrupt, Michael, one second. I'm sorry, but that's precisely the case. They're attacking because they know he's over the target, and they do know what he's talking about. You're always attacked when you're over the target and you know what you're talking about. So continue. Yeah. I'm sorry.
So is this, we should ask ourselves, is this destruction by design? Or is this an attempt to make debt colonies out of weak European countries? We say here in our program that austerity doesn't work. Varoufakis is the finance minister. He goes in these meetings with European officials where he's forbidden to talk microeconomics. He talks about this stuff. He gets attention towards these issues. But then nothing happens. Plus, he's being viciously attacked.
He's forbidden to talk macroeconomics. Just want to make sure the audience heard that and didn't think it was microeconomics.
No, macroeconomics.
Yeah.
Now, do we really at that point have the luxury to think that Schäuble, the German finance minister, is unable to understand that austerity doesn't work? Because I think it does.
He does.
So then what are they doing to Greece and the periphery of Europe? Are they trying to build a European territory where austerity and banker dictatorship is unquestionable? Has the euro become a kind of political weapon in the hands of the elite? Are they trying to transform Greece and these countries into sweatshop economies so that they can stop being dependent on China or something? So there you have it. Think about these questions and then try to answer why Varoufakis is being slandered in the way that he is.
Yeah, slander is the first sign to me that you're doing something right. Yeah, I mean, all the big financial mags this month, whether it was Bloomberg or the Wall Street Journal, talked about Greece falling back into recession. And I got a message from a stranger on Facebook. He said, "Why do you like Syriza? They seem like a bunch of bums and they're failing."
This is propaganda, Daniela. Right. I want to talk a little bit about this.
Yes, please.
How statistics are used in tricky ways to serve rhetorical purposes. When I say rhetorical, I mean, you know, political propaganda.
Here in the U.S.
Yes.
But here in the U.S., like, all the emphasis is off the banks in all directions, left and right. I was talking earlier about how we're all pawns in this organized deflection campaign off of the speculators. And, oh, that's the break. Let's continue on the other side. This is your listening to World Crisis Radio. World Crisis Radio. This is Daniela Walls hosting for Dr. Webster Tarpley. We have so much left to cover in this episode. We never get to anything, Michael. You see, we've an hour and a half long, but it goes so fast. We were talking on the other side about how all the emphasis, and I was getting angry, is off the speculators. We're all in this organized campaign of smoke off these speculators, and they use this rhetoric like, the 99 versus 1 or income inequality to deflect from the possibility of a radical systemic overhaul of the banking system. And this is why banking oligarchs own political foundations and think tanks. The left here is putting the burden on the people with increased taxes, and the banks and markets that have caused everything are never called out. The Philadelphia Amtrak crash, you know, who knows what the left will call for, but if the fear is, you know, it's going to be a larger tax burden on the people for infrastructure. That shouldn't be the case. The Fed has to provide the same loans as usual. We've said this, that they give to Wall Street to rebuild and put the money back into the system with a Wall Street transaction tax, and demand the GOP Congress stop looting, underfunding Amtrak using a Wall Street sales tax and Fed policies and no privatization. Enough is enough.
Okay. As you said, we read this month that Greece has plunged back into recession.
Mm-hmm.
I read here from Bloomberg, Greece returns to recession as bailout impasse drains economy. The Wall Street Journal says Greece falls back into recession. Reuters, we read Greek economy slips back into recession in first quarter.
Right. I was reading those articles too. And the thing is, they cited that it was Syriza's policies were the reason. Yeah. But like, what policies? I mean, they've been in government for what, 4 months now? And it seems like the EU are trying to stall everything and not even let them implement the program.
Yeah. It's exactly the same in all Greek mainstream media. Like you said, this is an attempt to discredit the new left-wing government in Greece. They also give a reason behind the supposed recession. There is instability, loss of confidence, and the pressure on the real economy because of the prolonged period of negotiations between Greece and its lenders. So, in other words, what they're saying is, don't you dare question the Washington consensus. Oh, and by the way, stop whining and go on implementing it. You know?
And is that true? I sure as hell don't remember any recovery. What's the real story? Like, was there any recovery? I mean, okay. What are the examples of a recovery? Is there a subsequent recession now as compared to the stated recovery?
To put it simply, no.
Okay.
There are two problems with that narrative, so I need a second to explain this.
Okay.
First of all, they say new recession, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
What they're referring to is that the GDP produced during the first trimester of 2015 was less than the GDP produced during the last trimester of 2014. Now, stick with me for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, this isn't called a recession. To call something recession or growth, you have to compare it to the corresponding period of time of the previous year. So, compared to the first trimester of last year, the first trimester of this year showed a 0.3% increase in GDP. And that's the way you judge whether there's growth or recession, by looking at numbers on an annual basis. And on an annual basis, we had the first trimester of this year closing with a marginal 0.3% growth. This is practically stabilization. It's nothing important. But there's also a second point here. They say recession is back, which implies that there had been a recovery, right?
Yeah, what's the recovery they're referring to?
They are referring to the quote-unquote real GDP growth of 0.8% in 2014.
Okay, so it's just abstract numbers on a page. Was there 0.8% growth in 2014?
Well, yes, but no. Here's what happened.
Okay.
Nominal GDP fell from that of 2013. So nominally, Greece had a recession in 2014. But real GDP, that's a term used, expansion or contraction, also takes account of the inflation rate. So in 2014, nominal GDP fell, but prices fell even more quickly. There was price contraction also, what's called deflation. If you combine these two numbers, it gives you a very small real GDP growth. And they call that a recovery. Truth is, this is no recovery. It's a depression.
So, another smokescreen and confusion put up by the central bankers and their media arm
like we do, big circular distraction from the reality that we're all victims of depression because of banks. All of us.
Yeah, what they are trying to tell us is Greece had an austerity government in 2014. So 2014 was a year of recovery, which 2014 was not. And now they have an anti-austerity government, and 2015 is showing signs of return to recession. The truth, if anything, Daniela, is the complete opposite.
Yes.
There is no reason for the Greek economy to grow because there's no investment. But the economy has stabilized in this near-death condition precisely because there haven't been any new austerity measures taken by this new government. Yes.
That's super interesting. So there hasn't been new investment, yet there's stable because of this propaganda. But yet there's stabilization because there's also no austerity cuts.
Yes, that's how low.
So austerity creates stabilization.
Yes, that's how low the Greek economy is, actually. It's in such a bad shape that just by leaving it alone, it tends to stay where it is because there's no new austerity,
mm-hmm.
which people have by now come to expect all the time.
Yeah, you know? We're conditioned to think that austerity is normal and it's all our own fault. I'm wondering through this, what effect this campaign has on the progress of the negotiations between the Greek government and the EU?
The Greek government has found itself in a very rough situation. The other side seems to be committed to the dogma of austerity and all the old ways, the terms of the previous bailout programs. They are blackmailing with a Grexit. In other words, will mm-hmm. kick you out of the euro, you know?
So the point is that the propaganda campaign is contributing negatively to the negotiation process.
Yes, yes. And at that point, Daniela, if you allow me, I want to get a little bit into geopolitics.
Yes, I want you to get into geopolitics, and I want you to take your time. But remember that this is our last segment, and we always promise this every week. But with all the traveling, I just want to fill in this before, because I know the music's going to come and then we're going to have our voices get scrambled and then the show's over. So we have to promise to finish this on United Front Radio and do this with Kyle this week, because we never get to finish the points we're trying to make because we always run out of time. So for the remainder of the show, please talk about the geopolitical situation and take your time. But We'll finish this in an hour long discussion, because I know that you and I have so much to talk about when it comes to this, and there's some big points to be made.
Yeah. So things are not looking good. We may yet have an actual world crisis ahead of us, not just radio, a real world crisis.
Yeah.
This matter is so complicated.
It's not funny. We're headed. There's very scary things on the horizon that are possible.
Yeah, I can't even begin to explain, and time is short, but I'll try to simplify things as much as possible and just pose a few questions for our listeners to think about. Europe is strategically important. Europe is NATO's hub for the control of countries in Russia's West Front. But the question is, what does Europe have to offer these countries anymore? What can these peoples of Europe expect? Becoming debt colonies like Greece has been the last 5 years? So on the one hand, you have this attempt by the West to control these countries. And on the other hand, you have the BRICS becoming a big world power.
Michael, so that's the end of the show. We're going to finish this on United Front Radio. You've been listening to World Crisis Radio. Have a wonderful week.